The Buddha encouraged us to consider our expectations about our life, our well-being, our lifespan. Well, on one level, we have a couple of days left of the winter retreat. But how long are we going to live? How long is your lifespan? We chant the words, I'm of the nature to die. We hear the scriptural teachings. And the mind can just switch off. When the Buddha says, yeah, none of us know when our last moment will come, the mind can simply go. Well, I heard it all before. Yeah, right. Death is imminent. Yeah, happens to everyone. Yeah, got that. So do you know when you're going to die? That which switches off and says, yeah, I know that. Yeah, heard that before. This is the voice of avijja, ignorance. Heard it all before. Yeah, I know this one. So do you know? What day are you going to die on? Monday, Tuesday? Be an April death, or a March death, or a July death? September? January? The 1st, the 2nd, 21st? One of these days of the calendar is the day that you are going to die on. Isn't that the fact? And isn't it the fact that none of us know which day that's going to be? What time? What are the circumstances going to be? Comfortable? Uncomfortable? Long and lingering, painless fading? Car crash? What's it going to be? None of us know. Illness, accident, being attacked, being hit by a meteorite. Anything can happen. These bodies are an unexploded bomb. Can go off at any time. Anything can trigger the fuse. If you have an aneurysm, blood vessel bursts in your brain, just have a few seconds, 3 or 4 seconds, before everything goes black and that's it, game over. I see many people receive many families coming to visit virtually every day. People talking about the deaths of their loved ones. Some of them are expected. Dad was 83 and he died after having cancer for 6 months. Others are very unexpected. Last year, the family of a woman who was in her early 40s, making breakfast for the kids to go to school, sat down and said, I feel strange, and died at the breakfast table. It's like a light being switched off. So the Buddha encouraged us to contemplate the fragility of life, to help us to live wisely, to not be complacent, to not be swept along by that human impulse that always puts death over the horizon. Somewhere else, some other time, off in the unknown and misty future. But instead to bring it right home, to live each day, each moment, as if you really did just have one more exhalation to go. If we know that we're only guaranteed 3 or 4 more seconds, how do you want to live? What do you want your mind to be dwelling upon? Your list of things to do? Your list of unrequited loves? A list of things that you did poorly that were worthy of criticism or you feel bad about. The list of your achievements or your prizes and qualifications. What do you want the mind to be on? Missing your children? Worrying about whether you left the gas on? The unpaid bills? Should you make an appointment with the dentist? If you've only got 3 or 4 seconds, the dentist doesn't matter anymore. All those conversations that were painful, difficult, those broken friendships that can't be repaired, the precious memories, the great achievements, sorrows, delights, what happens to them all? Oh, we contemplate the fragility of life, the uncertain nature of this very lifespan, so that we'll live wisely. It keeps our attitude clear and open here in the present moment. I've known people nearly to choke to death while discoursing avidly on mindfulness. With a mouthful of food goes down the wrong way, well, giving a vigorous exposition of the wonders of mindfulness, food goes down the wrong way. Thank goodness for the Heimlich maneuver. So we can say we've only got a couple of days of the retreat and then the rest of the year will begin and then we've got meetings to have and Sangha offices to decide upon and travels to organize and all that over there. But if you've already had your last breath a day and a half before, what does that say about what you've got to do next week? Oh, if we put our heart into these kind of contemplations, then they really have an effect. If we don't, if we just go, oh yeah, 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 life is impermanent, marana damomi marananganatito. Yeah, I know that, yeah, 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 yeah. Can't we hear something new? Can't we hear something inspiring? So when's your moment going to be? We reflect in this way so that we can see the array of things that the mind attaches to. Our fond memories, painful memories, the things that we love that we want to stay close to, the things that we're stressed by and want to get away from, the things that we look forward to in the future, the things that we dread in the future. This is a way of reflecting upon all of those and to consider, to see when there's that quality of attachment, clinging. Right there is bondage. When there's no clinging, there's no bondage. The clinging is what binds. Upadana is the cause of limitation. Without clinging, there's no time. Past and future disappear. Feelings of individuality, even the very feeling of locatedness, being somewhere, it's all fall away. Oh, conventionally speaking, we say this is March the 30th, a couple of days of retreat. But in the reality of Dhamma, in this moment, the truth is sanditiko, akaliko, ehipasiko, timeless, here and now. So we reflect upon the frail and dependent nature of the body, of this life, to see, to recognize those areas of identification and clinging, so they can be let go of. So then, in that letting go, then the deathless, the unborn, the undying, the unailing, the unaging, the ownerless, can become apparent. The unborn, the unoriginated, the uncreated is obscured because of our obsession with the born, the created, and the formed. Me being a person, me being a Buddhist, a man, a woman, old, young, English, Thai, Sri Lankan, American, Hungarian. all of those I ams, those identifications, obscure the reality of Dhamma. When the clinging stops, then the Dhamma is apparent. We don't have to create a special unconditioned me or a timeless me. It's already there. The Dhamma is already self-sustaining. Dhamma literally means that which upholds, that which supports, maintains. It is the reality. So when the mind stops attaching to the born and the dying, then the birthless and the deathless is apparent. So to focus on the fragility of our own life, the uncertainty of the time of our death, is not to make us more depressed or insecure or anxious, but rather to help the heart to recognize, what could there be to worry about? The Dhamma is unborn, undying. What's there to lose? Who's there to lose it? Oh, some of our regrets can be very strong. Our feelings of love and attachment. Some of our beloved possessions. Things that we really feel that we are. Our family. Our qualifications. Our gender. Our nationality. There are some areas of clinging that are extremely crunchy, deeply rooted, like the knotted roots of an ancient oak tree, thick and deep and tightly curled, buried down in the dark. And we recognize those roots are strong, convoluted, tightly bound. But that which knows those roots, that which knows those feelings of ownership or regret or achievement, that which knows them is not bound to them. That which knows the feeling of longing is not longing. That which knows the feeling of regret or aversion is not averse, is not regretting. This is the refuge. The heart which knows attraction, aversion, ownership, longing, resentment, jealousy, is not tied to any of those qualities. That's the refuge, the escape hatch. And when the heart takes refuge in that knowing, it doesn't mean that those feelings switch off. It can be the knowing that this is really intense. I've been swept along by a huge wave or blasted by a powerful wind. These windy days we've had this last little while. Being out and being buffeted, blown this way and that. The wind is still blowing, we're still being knocked left and right. But the mind knows, well, this is a strong one. It knows that feeling, it knows that quality, but doesn't have to be bound or limited by it. It's not defined by it. Just knowing the experience of a blustery day, a blast of longing, fear, regret, desire, grief. So in the midst of birth and death, there's the birthless, the deathless. It's always here, inescapable. The mind can be distracted from its presence by absorbing into the born and the dying, but the birthless and the deathless is always here, just like the space that the earth spins in as it whirls around the sun. The space is always here. But because of our dwelling on the surface of the earth, identified with the changes of each day and the passages of day and night, spring and summer, autumn, winter, we miss the space that the earth is whirling through. The space is always here. this very space of the unconditioned heart. Just the same. Our world spins through it, succeeding, failing, loving, hating, praised, criticized, coming together, falling apart, healthy, sick. The space which knows that, receives that, is aware of that, is always present. If there's a taking refuge in that spacious, open awareness, then the spinning of our world, succeeding, failing, gaining, losing, being praised, being criticized, happiness, unhappiness, just spins through the space of our knowing, open, unbiased attention. This is where we find freedom. Not when the retreat's over, not when the sitting's over, not when my illness has gone away, not when this problem has been solved, but here, ever-present. The solution's never over there. It's always here.